Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut or shortened due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guests today for this finale Jazz Shapers of the season are Rosella and Hugh Bogier. I hope I've said that properly. We'll soon find out. They'll tell me otherwise if I've got it wrong. Co-founders of The Thinking Traveller, a travel brand specialising in high-end exclusive villas and experiences. Check out their website. It's extraordinary. While holidaying in Stromboli, an island near Sicily, newlyweds Rosella and Hugh were so captivated they sought a way to leave their lives in Paris, where Rosella was a cell biologist and Hugh an engineer, and designed themselves a life in Sicily. In 2002, they made their move, relocating to Palermo and initially launching a walking tours business before friends offered their villas to rent. Rebranding as The Thinking Traveller, Rosella and Hugh built slowly, investing in the villas they took on and creating a team driven by local knowledge. Having joined forces with a similar business on the Greek islands in 2021, The Thinking Traveller portfolio now includes around 300 properties across Sicily, Puglia, Corsica and Greece, all of them offered exclusively. And here they are right in front of me, the happily married couple.
They're
both smiling, going, where do we go with this? It's lovely to meet you both, two for the price of one. It's a special Bogoff edition. I'm going to start with Rosella. Hugh apparently set this business up and you joined him. I want to get my facts right. Is that correct?
It is. At the time, I'd just finished my PhD and I was quite happy with my research. And it was then when I started accompanying him in my spare time whilst I was looking for a job in Sicily in research that I actually decided that slowly that it was quite interesting. And research at the time in Sicily wasn't giving me the same opportunity I had in Paris or in San Francisco before. So I said, well, I can start doing it with him. So it was a quite lighthearted decision. It wasn't, okay, I'm going to abandon my career and join him forever. It was like, okay, let me do these walks with you and visit these villas with you and help. And then it just absorbed me completely. So I almost forgot to look for another job in research.
And why, Hugh, had you left the brilliant world of engineering and cars to go and do a travel thing? What possessed you?
Well, it was actually a longer journey than that because I was an engineer.
Yeah.
But that was actually in Bologna in Italy. So quite a while before I met Rosella. I then went to Paris and I did a master's there, sort of cut out of the world of work for about a year and then took a job in marketing in Paris. So I was actually working as a marketeer in Paris, although it's easier to say I was an engineer for some reason, I don't know. I met Rosella, and after probably a year or so, I was just getting fed up with what I was doing. I was getting fed up with the corporate game. I'd always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always wanted to start something up. I was the sort of guy who used to have three business ideas a night in dreams and then wake up and forget them all. And it was actually the end of 98, just after I met Rosella. My younger brother was killed in a bicycle accident. So that was obviously a very difficult time. Yeah. And it was really at that time that I just thought, what the hell, life's too short. I can't be doing with this sort of climbing the greasy pole. I'm going to jack it all in and start something by myself. So that's when I started coming up with ideas for real.
And the travel piece, why travel?
Always loved traveling. So we went to Sicily, as you mentioned in your intro. It was November, it was cold in Paris. We climbed up Stromboli, which is this crazy volcano in the Mediterranean. And it was sunny and we went swimming. And at that point, we both just said to ourselves, look, it would be lovely to come and live here for a bit.
That making the leap, Hugh, was it? Obviously, you said it was related to the life is too short. Has that been the mantra for the two of you ever since? Or has that sense of risk and your relationship with it changed with the years?
Maybe one for Rosella.
Right? Rosella.
No, go ahead. He's the risk taker. But we have tried to live our life at the fullest and really trying to enjoy every opportunity and really catch the opportunities. And that was the same for me before even meeting you. But with the company and the kids, it's strange how, for me, probably having children, becoming a mother, has tuned down a bit my sense of wanting to take risks. So in the last 22 years, Hugh's been more the visionary, the leader, and that I've been the one trying to keep things together in a way.
And has that been, Hugh, because again, it goes back to that moment, that very almost incomprehensible moment in your life when everything changes. Is it because you keep going, it kind of matters, but it doesn't matter? Is that what's the internal dialogue for you?
There is a bit of that, for sure. But I think, I mean, to be fair, that goes back further than that. So I moved to Italy when I was 23. I didn't speak a word of Italian. I went to work in a production line as an engineer. That was very much, let's see what happens. Doesn't really matter.
And why was that there so young for you?
I'd graduated in 1990 as an engineer. I didn't have a job. And there was a recession on at that time in the UK. Italy was actually doing extremely well. And in particular, diesel engines were doing extremely well. Bit of a dirty word now, but that's what we were making. And so I was offered this job in Italy and I jumped at it. It sort of combined everything for me, everything I wanted, sort of getting away, a new adventure, learned a new language, met a new bunch of people and had a really interesting time.
But that metaphor, again, of learning a new language, I mean, both of you are bilingual, trilingual, whatever you are, from Italian to English, so hopefully your Italian is pretty good now. Rossella, is it?
Very good.
Very good, yeah. Excellent, good. She's now blushing slightly. Is that leap into the unknown, although, Rossella, your attitude to risk is different, is it fun? Or are you the one, I know you were saying you're the one that wants to keep things kind of in balance. Do you see Hugh's fun and live through it? Or are you constantly kind of going, hold on, I do see it. I don't want to do that. That's you. And I'm happy with my job. I'm just trying to work out where that interrelationship goes as well.
Getting deep into couple therapy, isn't it?
Well, I don't charge very much. I just figured we could kill two birds with one stone here.
I recently almost had to remind myself that that's exactly what I liked in Hugh, is like risk-taking, because it is through... Because he has been much more risk-taking than me, I've been more the conservative one. But on the other hand, we have jumped on opportunities together a number of times. I mean, we had a really nice lifestyle in Palermo 12 years ago. And at some point we decided quite quickly, we said, well, do we want the kids to grow up in a very comfortable life, probably even nicer life in terms of, you know, being able to go on a sailing boat every weekend, going around visiting our villas, the kids' comment where we were taking them around, because it's been really a family business. We're doing everything with the kids. We're going to see this villa in Marsala on Sunday. How many pullers has he got, Mummy? One or two? And I was like, oh my God. And then we decided to move to London with them to make their upbringing a bit more international and get them more fluent in English. And for us to be here, we thought it was important at that stage to manage the business from here, because the office has always been here. And we decided, two months. And I was a bit terrified, but actually it's been an opportunity as well. And before that, I did go to do a year in Berkeley when I was 25, and then I went to Barcelona, and then I went to Paris. So the risk-taking is in me. It's just it's been probably toned down by having to compensate Hugh being much more.
I was going to say, without going into couples therapy, and don't worry, we will return to the business story here. That's actually it. It's embrace the thing that you fell in love with, and then work out where the transference is going on and who's playing what role and why Hugh. Yeah. It's all Hugh's fault, obviously.
Yeah, always.
We'll be coming back for more. I'm only kidding, I promise. It's equal. We'll be coming back much more from Rossella and Hugh, and we'll be talking much more about the villas, the aesthetic, and how they have built this fabulous business across some beautiful parts of Europe and beyond. Right now, though, it's time to hear a taster from the Positive Disruptors podcast, a new podcast which can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Kieran John, a lawyer at Michigan Dorea, talks to leaders who've taken innovative approaches to make a positive impact. In this clip, we hear from Chris Rigby, co-founder of the venture consultancy CoLab 8.
Positive Disruptors from Michigan Dorea.
You've got this real sort of delineation between what is a company employee and this word entrepreneur. I think entrepreneur is such a sort of closed off club. You know, you either are one or you aren't one. And I much prefer the term starter to an entrepreneur. people can be a starter in whatever job that they're doing. You know, I just want to be creative within the realms of this job and try to do things in an improved way all the time. And so, you know, give the idea that you can innovate in whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be the new smartphone or any other great invention that's changed all of our lives.
I love that idea of a starter. I know I've heard the term entrepreneur as well for people in an established organization. Are there certain true characteristics of a starter?
Well, I think that anyone has the propensity to be creative. Yeah, everyone's got ideas. Everyone has critiques about how things are done in their company, whether that's people who, you know, look back at when it was so much better, which, you know, we will come across, or people who just see the way that they're done now and, you know, think, well, it would be better if we did it this way, or it would suit our customers this much more, or our customers are telling me that they want things like this. I think that it's the role of those organizations to empower people to come forward with those ideas and really transform the ideas that people have into delivering them within the realms of what's possible in whatever organization it is, whatever regulatory environment they're working in. And so I think anyone has the propensity to be a starter. Not everyone has the willingness, the risk-taking appetite, anything else, to be an entrepreneur.
Positive Disruptors from Mishkon Dorea.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers, and they're racking up. There's about 500 of them, I think, on the Jazz Shapers podcast. And you can hear this very program again if you pop the words Jazz and Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. My guests today are Rossella, I hope I said that nicely, just like you did, Hugh, before, and Hugh Bogier, co-founders of The Thinking Traveller, a travel brand specialising in high-end exclusive villas and experiences. I guess we better talk about the villas and how you built this collection. I've read a bunch of stuff about the business. The website, as I mentioned right at the beginning, is beautiful. It's kind of the M&S equivalent of what M&S do for food, you do for villas and the like. When you first started, Rossella, curating this group of villas, what was driving your aesthetic? Was it personal? Was it about the people you had in mind? Where did it come from? Because if you look online, and people will, I know you will, you will see stunning, individual, characterful, beautiful. I mean, I know you don't like to use the word luxury, but kind of just tasteful properties with real heart. Where did all that come from?
I think we were quite lucky because we had been, as Hugh mentioned, offered beautiful properties by friends and friends of friends, and they were truly beautiful. And there were a few that needed a bit of work because maybe they had been built in the 70s, but they were in a stunning location. So I think unconsciously what we went for was A, the stunning location, really beautiful, unique corner of, for the first few years was Sicily. And then when we expanded, the same, just the most beautiful places in the regions where we've been. And then properties with charm, which had a soul, which had something to tell. So we don't really like to deal or offer condominiums or stuff that has been done to be rented. It's usually properties that the owners deeply love, where they put their story in it. And this is what our guests really love to find. So it is an experience to rent the villa. It's not just I'm going to spend the night there and, you know, I pay for my accommodation. The first experience is really being able to sleep in these properties that had been Arabic castles or old masseria restored that had painted ceilings and the family portrait. Or in Greece, you have obviously more modern ones, but still where the owners have chosen carefully every single piece. And the location has to be amazing.
Everyone is a different universe in a way, has its own little feeling. An excellent background in biochemistry to prepare you for this world of villas. Just tell me that about tell me about that leap. And was it a leap, or is it just that, you know, humans are interesting and complex, and you can be a biochemist one day and then you can be a designer another? I mean, they are quite different.
It is, but it's the second you said, because even when I decided to choose my career, I've always been interested in beautiful aesthetics. I've always loved languages. It was not coincidence that to do, after my graduation, when I wanted to do research, I picked Berkeley, and then I picked Barcelona, and then I picked Paris.
So good choices.
I was interested in beautiful places, not just in beautiful cells to investigate. And I had deep down, I think, every Sicilian idea, and you read it in the feedbacks that our clients leave us after coming back, we do have a very deep sense of hospitality and welcoming. So the idea of showing, especially after having lived abroad and in a time when Sicily was really known just for mafia or boring stuff like pizza or, I don't know, is your mum dressed in black or, you know, there's boring things. Having the pride of sharing the deepness of cultural heritage and biodiversity and beautiful scenery and walks, etc., really made me proud. So it was quite easy. But what I learned doing research was that really attention to detail and being very precise and very accurate in whatever we do. And that, and Hugh is the same, we transferred into the business. And it's quite unusual.
Well, this is the thing, the attention to detail, Hugh, I was going to pick up, because obviously you're more responsible for the tech and the user experience. But that user experience has to be imbued with gorgeous photography, with a really wonderful journey, a customer journey. It starts there, but it's got to reflect and complement the very properties and the places that you're taking people to. That is the engineer in you as much as you went into marketing. Is that right? And is that, again, the leap is not really a leap at all? It's just you're a precise kind of person.
Yes, I think so. And I think we're actually, both Rossella and I, we have a very sort of precise technical side to us. We're both scientists, but we also have a creative side to us. So, you know, in the early days, we took all the photographs together. We'd be out dressing the villas and Rossella would sort everything out, and I'd be behind the camera and I'd take my shots, and then we'd go back and process them. And as you said, we'd get them up on the website and make sure that all the words were just right. You know, read through everything 10 times before it went live, ensure that every description was perfect, that we were giving our customers exactly what they were expecting. So, yeah, I think that attention to detail was just there from the beginning.
Obviously, the industry, hospitality, travel, was somewhat affected when the global pandemic COVID-19 happened. And you had a decision to make. You ploughed on. There were loyal people that said, I think I read that something like 85% of all those clients that were about to take places pushed their place on. They kept their deposits and they went and did the thing. But that's a jolt. And it was a massive jolt for your business. And I think at that point, you were probably looking at options. Just tell me a little bit about the thought process around not just surviving, but thriving, and why you then looked towards private equity and why you then looked towards a merger. Maybe Hugh, start with that.
Well, 2020 started out very well. January, February, we got into March, and this express train just came straight at us. You know, nobody was expecting it. I think the travel industry hadn't seen anything like that, maybe since things shut down in 1939. It was terrifying. Immediately, our clients started calling us up saying, you know, what's happening? What are you going to do about it? We had an office in New York at that point with several people on the sales team. That turned overnight from a, you know, very successful sales office to an uncontrolled refunds office operating until late in the night, UK time. So unfortunately, we just had to shut that down. That was the first and only major casualty, it turned out, of the pandemic, apart from sort of large parts of our sanity, probably.
Well, I want to ask you about the sanity thing, because we'll come on to, I know that we'll then briefly talk about the merger and things, but it's one thing being an employee in a business, and it's hard thinking about your own security. And of course, when people personalize this stuff, it's not about the job, it's about what the job gives you, which is money, which enables you to put food on the table, really practical things. When it's your business and both of your business and you're sharing in it, Rossella and Hugh together, how did you manage that level of stress? Because I can only imagine, I mean, I had my own stress as a part owner in a business. It was pretty, I mean, it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with, but it's yours only. So just take me back to that time if you want to. You probably don't. But just tell me how you got through it, do you think?
We went through, personal level, we were obviously like everybody else in lockdown at home with the kids. So always trying to be positive with them and for them. So when it comes to priorities, at the end of the day, my first priority is being a mama. So I had to ensure that there was enough tranquility and serenity at home for their sake. And that kept me going and stopped me from getting over worried, because at the end of the day, it was the day to day. Okay, let's, you know, do lunch and dinner and go for walks and chat and have nice picnics. The way the team stuck with us working day and night, not knowing, you know, some people just calling up and say, hey, you know, why don't you reduce my pay by 50%, well before the furlough came. That was really amazing. And that also gave us strength. And really it is positive feedback that we had something unique, that people really wanted to survive with us, stick with us and make it last. So it was fantastic. And it was the same with the owners. Mm. And it was the same with the clients, sending amazing letters and saying, you know, how...
Which is testament to the fact that for years and years and years and years, there'd been strong relationships both within the business and then into the tentacles of everybody else. The merger briefly and bringing another business online, was that, do you see again, would that have happened if the pandemic hadn't have happened?
It certainly wouldn't have happened at that time. One of the things that happened during the pandemic, you know, apart from securing and strengthening our internal and external relations as a business, was that we started talking a lot more with competitors, people that we'd perhaps been sort of skirting around for years, suddenly became great sort of virtual friends. And we would create these groups, you know, thinking perhaps that travel had been hit particularly hard and commiserating with each other about how things are going, sharing stories and ideas about how to get through. And one of the companies that we, the people in particular, Dimitri and Anna from White Key, which is a Greek business based in Athens, specializing in villas in Greece, they'd started back in 2008. We'd sort of watched each other, but we'd never been in contact. And within 18 months of starting talking, we'd merged. We actually acquired their company. And so we now have offices in London and in Athens.
It sounds very good. I mean, we can think of the next place we're going to open. And I'm interested as well. So we'll work out which part of the world we're going to go and and go and conquer. Much more coming up in my final chat with Rossella and Hugh Bogier. And we've got some typically high energy music from Ezra Collective. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Hugh and Rossella are my business shapers. The Bogiers are here, kind of. I mean, you know, you have your name as well, but we will give you the stage name, as you called it. They are the people behind The Thinking Traveller. Here you are, two decades in, both of you, not just your marriage, as they roll their eyes, but also the fact that you are together and working in this place. Is the passion still there for the product?
Absolutely.
And what is it today that you still love, that you loved when you found your first villa?
It's the human connection at all level. The people that work with us were amazing, and the people we meet in this journey on both sides, so the owner of the villas, because all the villas we work with work exclusively with us. So
yeah, I read
it's
that.
Kind
just
of a
you.
Partnership. Yeah. So we talk on WhatsApp any time, day and night.
How do you manage that? There's a lot of them.
300 after 20 years actually is nothing if you consider how the world of rental has exploded in the last 5 years. Everybody says I'm peaked and I have like 30,000 villas. So 300 is really, it's a community. It's a community of owners that want to be with us and believe in us. Sometimes complains if there's enough bookings, but we then try to find solutions together.
And, do you bring them together ever? Do you have a kind of an annual get-together?
We used to. We haven't done it for a while, but there's a lot of personal relationship, not just with us, but with the people that work with us, the people on the ground. We have a fantastic team in every destination that really sits there with the owners and say, okay, yes, maybe we can change these jacuzzi. Here would be fantastic. And because we work exclusively with them, it's really a partnership. We try to improve, the brand of the villa and the experience of the clients.
I mean, funnily enough, people talk about words like brand and they talk about technology and they talk about scale. And here we are. And what you're really saying is there's 300 human beings with 300 beautiful properties. And your job is to ensure that human beings love these memorable experiences. That's sort of it in an essence. But do you want to get bigger here?
Well, I mean, you mentioned brand. I think the brand is very much a consequence of the other things that you just mentioned. You know, it's a very real brand. It's not designed in a studio and made up. It's something that comes from a living, breathing organism, which is this community of 300 villa owners and a very passionate team that we have of 150 odd people.
And the bigger community of our guests and then that keep coming back.
The huge community of the guests, but also on the ground. I mean, the thousands of people that we give indirectly work to through the villas, through the experiences. Each villa will have approximately, on average, about five people, probably between gardeners
it's
and
your chef.
Yeah, my chef and, that I'm going to have in this vision I have now. I'm visualizing with you two here. I'm going. It's going to happen. Yeah. I'm going to bring the family, and they're going to have a chef. Where? What else? They're going to have gardener. Someone looking after the swimming pool.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Who else?
And the yoga teacher.
The yoga teacher. Mm.
Do you want Italian classes for your kids?
Of course.
Do you want kayak
your boat skipper.
I need a boat skipper. This is your. This is this is really good. I can have a yogurt maker along with my yoga.
It's not just breakfast, Elliot.
I saw the photos and I want that breakfast. I want that breakfast in front of me.
Pasta making or pizza or whatever it is. And cooking
but everything,
classes,
whatever people want, basically.
Yeah.
And do you foresee anything stopping you achieving what you want to achieve in the next few years? You know, what is there a new vision, or is it just we're just going to keep delighting people? We're just going to keep being the Condé Nast number one choice, which you have been, I think, for the last 7 years or something. Crazy numbers.
Eight or so.
It
is. One more.
One more. Don't get your facts wrong, Elliot. Eight years. I mean, that's
in a row.
It is a lot.
It's pretty extraordinary.
I very much hope that we can keep delighting people still and the way we've done it and evolving our concept of hospitality and the services we can provide and more beautiful villas around.
Just before I ask your song choice, because this hospitality word has come up a couple of times. You mentioned Will Gidara, who's been on the program recently, and he obviously coined the phrase unreasonable hospitality. Yeah. What's the definition for you of hospitality?
It's interesting. Many years ago, when for the first time we had a friend helping us to choose the right words for our mission, what came very spontaneously was we want clients to have their best holiday ever and we want them to come back. Mm. And it keeps happening. We get this spontaneous feedback. We will definitely be back. It's going to be difficult to go back to normal life after this week. And people are really blown away by not just the villa, by the service, the warmth with whom they are welcomed, by the house staff and our team. And that's just making people really happy and wanting to come back with us.
Yeah, I think it's, if the quality of the accommodation and the environment is a given, then it's about anticipating people's needs and surprising and delighting them. So, you know, really going beyond what they expect.
Thank you both for your time today on this, the final edition before the summer. What perfect timing. I wonder who did that then? I wonder how we worked that one out. Stu, producer, very clever man. Just before I let you go, it's been lovely seeing you. What is your song choice and why have you chosen it?
We chose a song by Pino Daniele, who's a singer was from Naples, quite well known in Italy, dedicated to Sicily. And he encompasses, I think, our love for Sicily. Obviously, Sicily had to be there because that's where it all started. And it's the love of Sicily and the love of the sun and he says the people that understands that it's time to change and the vibrancy and the light. And it's just not Sicily. It could be any little Greek island as well. It could be Corsica, like really our regions. So we really like that.
That was Sicily from Pino Daniele, the song choice of my business shapers today, Hugh and Rossella Bogier. They talked about wanting to surprise and delight everyone that comes to stay in their villas, absolutely critical in the hospitality world. They talked about the fusing of the precision and attention to detail alongside the creativity and the critical nature of that inside of their business. And finally, that important thing when you work closely with someone, whether you're married to them or you just have worked closely for many years, don't forget the other person's talent and the appreciation of it. Absolutely central to any working brilliant partnership. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend and have a lovely summer.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mish Kondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.